It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 695. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. The name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, and also facebook.com/miketechshow. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial. You can also go directly to instanthousecall.com. Recording the show very early on Thursday, January 13th tonight. I missed last week because I was really sick, battling an ear infection, a throat infection. I'm on a lot of meds. My voice is back. I can hear in my left ear again. And I'm very, very tired today. So I wanted to knock out the show and then go to bed extremely early tonight. That's my goal. And then maybe get a few hours sleep. And I know if I laid down, there would not have been a show today. So that's why we're starting early. I have some in the trenches tips on fixing a few things with Outlook again. And I will describe what is going on and what's happening with an update that occurred a couple weeks ago and what I'm finding here. Also going to talk Firefox and Chrome infections have escalated with all sorts of pop-ups. And I want to talk about that. And then I have a problem where something went wrong with the search couldn't be completed. And again, this is Outlook and what we had to do. So a lot of Outlook issues, a lot of Chrome and Firefox issues. And then I have a long email that I'm going to try to answer. So first, after an Office update, the user's Office 365, so it's Outlook 2016, he no longer could open anything that was email related because there was no association with Outlook. And he has an add-in called Mail Manager, and it couldn't open. And when I'm looking, I was like, wow, it's just an EML file. Anytime I went to the EML, couldn't open it. So it's Windows 10 Pro. I go in, oh, let's change the default app and make it Outlook. Outlook was not even available. So I'm like, all right, let's just do a reboot. Nope, Outlook not available. Well, here's what fixed it. And this actually fixed another problem for a user. Go to Programs and Features, right-click on Outlook, pick Change, and you're going to have a repair option. And you could do a quick repair or the online repair. The quick repair fixed everything. It fixed everything for that quick repair. I was really happy that I was able to solve that. And then another person had similar problems. It was a little different. Their Outlook was acting up and they couldn't search and they couldn't do a whole lot of things in Outlook. I said, let's do a repair. So this last update for Office really messed things up. One of the first links I want to put in, and this is one of my favorite sites that I've mentioned for years, and it's slipstick.com. And if Outlook is not recognized for your default email client, and there's lots of things to take a look at here, whether it's Windows 10 to do the repair, it goes over the quick repair using Outlook 64-bit with 32-bit applications. So it's a real nice link for troubleshooting and working with Outlook problems, which just seem to amass, and they all happen at the same time, of course, because everybody got the update or everybody processed that update. So I start seeing these problems, and then I let my son know. So this way, if he gets a call or we get, this is the first thing to try. Here's one you're going to like. The user had Office 2013, was instructed by someone to just install Office 365, and now everything's blended. When she opens up, sometimes it's Excel 2013, sometimes it's Excel 2016. Outlook was 2013, and it was driving her nuts. I'm not allowed to help them unless they get permission from the parent company. This was a client that used to be one of my bigger accounts, but when they were bought, I'm still their IT support, but they're not on retainer. There's a long story that needs to be definitely talked about on Tech Vets. It's definitely a Tech Vet story. Anyway, I finally get permission to be able to work on the person's system. I remote in and I uninstall Office 2013. But when you do that, you got to repair and do a quick repair of 2016 to get everything working better, all the associations correct. So again, doing the quick repair fixed another problem. The proper way of installing Office, if there's an older version, uninstall Office, then install the new version, and your email settings will get picked up. I've done this. I've removed Office 2013 with complicated Outlook setups. Put Office 365 on, and it went perfectly. As a matter of fact, I even mentioned this in a show. I had to make sure that it was the 32-bit version of Office. You always want to make sure it's the 32-bit version when you're installing first because of associations with other software apps and also add-ins. So the uptick on Chrome ads. I have a link that I'm going to, how to stop notifications. This is one on Windows 8 in Chrome. You have to go into the settings and then turn off notifications or block notifications. We had to do that on several computers over the last 2 weeks. They must have done something. There was an update in Chrome that has allowed ads being just pushed and they pop up on your computer. And it was terrible. We've seen this with several clients and we just had to knock them down by blocking the notifications. For Windows 10, when I'm installing it from scratch, I turn off all notifications. Now, you can always go back into the security and privacy settings and turn ones on that you need. Like maybe there is an app that has to communicate with something else. I always opt to turn them all off all the time from scratch, all of them. And then every notification button, I make sure it's off. So I also have a link here for Windows 8 because I still have a client, actually a couple clients with Windows 8. You can block notifications. Great question in the chat. Do you use group policy to control Chrome? No, I don't, because most of my clients that have servers, and they're becoming fewer and fewer, either not big Chrome users or I just haven't thought of going through that and actually controlling it. That's actually a very good idea. This particular client does not have a server, but I could do a local policy, take a look at that, a local group policy on the system. That's not a bad idea, not a bad approach to take a look at locking some of this down. So this way, when the application does the upgrade, it should obey the policy. Firefox infections, rogue killer. I've mentioned this a lot. Malwarebytes didn't find it. Adware Cleaner didn't find it. Rogue killer is my go-to when things are still slow or looking for that deep stuff that nobody else can find it. No other programs just don't find it. And rogue killer takes a long time to run. If you have the time, it's worth it. I've seen some really bad things pop up in Rogue Killer or after running Rogue Killer and removing all the recommended pups and things that it finds and registry entries, reboot the system, and the system is just so much better. Been seeing really big infestations in Chrome and Firefox, and we really need to see some better utilities to reset everything. Even in Chrome, I've reset a lot of settings. Firefox went in and made the default settings for the profile. Internet Explorer, that's always easy, but we're getting away from that. We don't want anybody using Internet Explorer anymore. Even Microsoft said, don't stop using it. You know, they're not going to have the updates. You got to take the time and go into the browsers. I'd like to see more tools geared to the browsers that will, you can maybe pick from a menu and options, and maybe there's something you know out there. What do you use to clean Firefox and Chrome? Or do you just rely on all of the main programs that we've always talked about for our typical cleaning? And that does clean out things from the browser, but I don't know if there's very specific tools I would like to know. So this is interesting. Client can't search. Something went wrong. Anytime they go to search within Outlook and they're having that error message, something went wrong and you can't search. I was trying everything from this link that I'm going to put in the show notes. There was no joy. Everything I was trying. Now, remember I was just complaining about the Outlook updates and the Office updates? Well, on this particular one, the update fixed the problem. I went in, did an update, then asked my user, it was Office 365, I asked the user to run it for a day, and he was able to search. We rebuilt the index, and even rebuilding the index prior to this did not get rid of that error. But doing an Office update actually fixed the searching problem. You know, you can't win sometimes. The update breaks something else, or, you know, fixes one thing and then breaks a couple other items. It is frustrating. I had a client last week that changed computers a few months ago, but he didn't have to change a door. He manages some properties and there's these permissions for the door that you have to go in if like a tenant changes or somebody moves, you have to change the codes for that person. And the only way to do this is dial up. Now, I didn't know any of this until he said, Mike, I can't connect anymore. Well, he went from an older desktop that had a modem in it that I did not realize was being used. He now has a Surface Pro. We had to buy from Amazon and then configure it, and now everything's working. There's a USB 56K modem that is pretty cheap, like $13, and it just plugs in USB. It shows up as a modem in Device Manager. You make sure it's the right COM port, or at least what COM port it's being identified as, and then go to your software, make sure the speed and the COM port is correct. He had it connected to an analog line out and was able to connect. It is the first time I had to deal with a modem in years. Just an interesting that this application can only, it's connected to a phone line for being able to control all the information. I said, boy, that's really dated. You might want to look at something more protected that, but then again, it's probably safer to only be able to connect via a dial-up connection with specific software, where if we put it on the internet, now it's hackable. There's got to be something in between where maybe he could just take a laptop and plug directly into it and then also do that work. But for right now, it's working and we got past it. But wanted to share that. If you come across someone that they only have USB ports and there's no way to put a physical modem in the system and they do still need it, you can get a USB modem. I have one email here from Neil. Hi, Mike. It's Neil from San Antonio. I'm the one whose wife several years back that when I seemed stuck on a job would ask, what would Mike do? I love that. I remember that. I still reference you all the time and really enjoy your podcast. Neil, I remember receiving that email and it just made my day. What would Mike do? I have a nonprofit running Server 2018 and 14 workstations running Windows 7 Professional. They want to add a Wi-Fi access point. They are using a Cisco firewall, but the person over in IT says my idea of giving it a static IP, turning on DHCP, and having the Wi-Fi hand out a .10 rather than a .01 network, and maybe even whitelisting by MAC addresses would still leave the other computers in the office susceptible to intrusion. That is partially correct. Let me continue. They say that no matter what I put in place, even a DMZ in the firewall, as long as I'm referencing the default gateway to get out to the internet, all the office PCS and equipment would be visible on the Wi-Fi network. I even suggested putting a little $50 Ubiquiti router between the switch and the network. It would give out five separate static IPs like 10.20.30.40.50. But they said that wouldn't work either. What am I not understanding? I would do this two ways. One, get a nice high-end like ASUS router that has a guest network. And you can just turn on the guest network and let it do its routing around the regular network. What I would do is put, I like your idea of the Ubiquiti router, but you need a static IP address coming in. You're going to need two. And I would put one on their main office router. And then on this, the Ubiquiti one or whatever one you want to buy, put a separate static IP on it. And when you run that out, you have to put first a dummy hub in between the ISP modem and the network. And I've done this where I had to create several networks at a site. If you put a hub, a switch, something that's not smart, that doesn't require an IP, and then each router has a different static IP address and then move forward from there, there's no way they are going to find the rest of the items. You can also segment the wired network. That's actually a great idea. I don't know if the switch that everything goes back to, you could create VLANs. But the simplest way is to just have a separate router connecting to the modem of the ISP and have that router just do its Wi-Fi. And there's no way, if there's separate IP addresses, that you're going to be able to see, and you can test that. You are not going to be able to see that. Taco in the chat says, with the Cisco WLAN controller, you can do that. So depending on what model you have, you should take a look at the capabilities of the Cisco. I like the idea of having separate hardware defining the different networks. I have four different routers I think I talked about, because there was total different functionality that was needed, that we had a Verizon Fios connection come in, and then I had the hub, and then I branched off, and they had five IP addresses static, and each one was different because we needed different remote accesses for the different devices. And then the different devices also communicating out, but that's not your problem. Here's even a better way is put the Ubiquiti access point and get the Ubiquiti controller for your Wi-Fi. That is so easy to set up different networks. And you can have an employee network and then a guest network. Or if you just want it only guest and it can't touch anything, you could just define that. Very simple to do and monitor. And it's not that expensive. When you add the controller, which is like the cloud controller, which you plug into a PoE switch, it's like $100, and then you're looking at $135 to $150 for an access point. That's some of the best ways to really lock down your Wi-Fi. What you're recommending, I wouldn't do. I wouldn't give it just a static IP address and do the DHCP. I'm not sure, but I think the IT person's kind of right. But if you keep it completely segmented, completely, there's no way that anybody on the Wi-Fi is going to be able to touch the wired computers or even whoever's on the Wi-Fi. Now, you didn't mention, and maybe I misread this, do you have an existing Wi-Fi that you want for employees and a different Wi-Fi for guests? Because that's something you could also make configure. And how are they doing the current Wi-Fi? Is it that Cisco device? Follow up with me, Neil. I don't know if I've, hopefully I answered your question. Definitely follow up and ask some more questions or give me some more info and let me know how you made out. Sorry it took so long to get back to you. I know you wrote me on June 5th. No, it's not that bad. It's the 13th. So hopefully this gets to you in time. Thank you so much for listening. And I love the comment, what would Mike do? Thank you very much. All right, that's it for tonight's show. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. Remember, the best way to support the show is use our Amazon link. And I say our because it's Carrie Holzman and my Amazon link that we share. And when you purchase something, what you want to do is go to our website, go to miketechshow.com, mikenation.net, or even tech-vets.com. Click on the Amazon link before you add your items to the cart. After you click on that link, anything you buy after that for that session will get credit. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back to support the show. We greatly appreciate that. Remember, Instant House Call for all of your remote access needs. And also Fabs Auto Backup 7 Pro. Can't live without it. Use it all the time. And got two more systems next week that we got to convert as we start to migrate Windows 7 to Windows 10. So that's happening more and more as everybody gets ready for the January deadline. We have to get everybody off of Windows 7. There'll be no more security updates in January. Get everybody to Windows 10. And Fabs is the perfect program to lift all of the settings and data off one system and getting it onto another or one drive to another as you upgrade. That's it. Hopefully see everybody next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.